let me ask you, first of all, about the defense issues, the defense strategy. Washington Post editorial said the president's proposals for reductions rest on some shaky assumptions. Do you agree, not agree?
I do agree. Look, I mean, I spent 18 months in the Pentagon, and certainly I see a lot of fat that here or there can be cut. But fundamentally, what I believe President Obama is doing is, by eviscerating the two-war standard, he really risks encouraging aggression among our adversaries. And at the same time, I'm not sure he understands that when you slice whole capabilities, it's not just a matter in another line item of restoring them. It can take decades to restore.
Yeah. Let me read this Post editorial, two paragraphs. I thought it was interesting. Mr. Obama acknowledges it was a mistake, after Vietnam, the Pentagon abandoned counterinsurgency and so on. He vowed Thursday not to repeat it. His solution is what the Pentagon is calling reversibility. Officials say the expertise and some of the officer cadre necessary to carry out counterinsurgency and nation building will be preserved so that that capacity could be restored if needed. However, Post writes, even if that works, the judgment that such operations can be ruled out for the next decade strikes us at odds with the reality of the Middle East in revolution, an increasingly belligerent Iran, and a North Korea undergoing an unpredictable leadership transition. Is that right?
I think it largely is correct. And one of the problems more broadly that people often talk about with regard to the military is that we're always fighting the last war. What I worry about is in terms of maintaining this issue on counterinsurgency and only rhetorically pivoting towards Asia, because that's really what President Obama is doing. He's not really adding substance to this idea that we're going to concentrate on East Asia. We're really not undertaking the preparations which are going to be needed in order to counter a resurgence in China in the future.
I'm not following part of this. It looks to me, we have a Marine in our family, and we got a couple Marines over at the house this weekend, and these guys were saying, they're in basic school at Quantico, these guys were saying it looks more likely we'd be in the Pacific now, maybe than maybe in the Middle East. We don't know. They don't know. But that seems to be the word. What is that for? Because we've decided that North Korea and China is where we have to worry, and not the Middle East. And how can we say that?
Exactly. Well, I'm explaining the logic, not advocating.
No, no. Okay.
Right now,
explain it to me again.
Of course. But while our most recent wars have been fought in the Middle East, and certainly any conflicts in the very near future look like they'd be centered in the Middle East, there is a feeling that as China rises and as China tries to exert itself as a great power, it will come into conflict with the United States. And so certainly there is a concern that perhaps we should be preparing to defend ourselves against China should China become even more aggressive. What worries me, however, is when we're talking about either A or B, we're not just reversing the Clinton administration's 1993 bottom-up review, which concluded that we should be able to fight two wars simultaneously. The Clinton declaration was really just a repackaging of a declaration which extended all the way back to 1940, when Franklin Roosevelt signed the Two Ocean Navy Act. What President Obama is saying is not only will we not be able to fight two wars simultaneously, we're not going to even really be able to have as much of a defensive presence in two oceans. And what worries me, and we see this time and time again with North Korea, with Iran, with Libya, with China, is that when the United States is in a conflict with one, they look at it as an opportunity to exert themselves in another region. We're not going to be able to defend against that.
Yeah, even if they're not natural allies, if one of them is engaged with us somewhere, the other one looks and says, well, we can mess up U.S. by engaging them elsewhere, right?
Yes, it's basic realism, and unfortunately, many of the self-described realists seem not to adhere too much to reality when it comes to the way rogue regimes would act.
Why haven't we heard generals and others speak up at this? He was standing there flanked by a very distinguished group, Ray Odierno and others. And I read the Washington Post yesterday. It said, you know, consensus, they all came together. When I read the article, it didn't really suggest that. It just said they had meetings and then the president decided. But do we really believe that the Marines and the Joint Chiefs and Odierno really agree with this?
Well, I don't. But look, I mean, I don't think, even if I disagree with President Obama, an actively serving general either needs to follow his orders or resign. I wouldn't take General Odierno's endorsement, just visual endorsement of Obama, that seriously. I'm much more interested in what the retired generals say, because you have within the Army, this, within the military in general, a whole network of mentorship. All the currently serving big-name generals served as lieutenants, as colonels, as brigadiers under other generals who are now retired, and I would be listening to what they say.
Who are they, Michael? We'll have them on. Tell us. Give us some names.
Many of the retired generals who we see, for example, Dan Petrosky, Chuck Wald in the Air Force, Bill Crouch in the Army, any number of retired generals who made the three or four star level, who commanded armies in Korea or elsewhere, I'd be waiting to see what they say, should they choose to say something.
Have I missed it? I haven't seen it yet. Maybe they're just trying, I'll try to digest it.
I haven't seen it yet, but I would suspect it would start to percolate out soon.
Good. We'll keep an eye. If you see something, please let us know, all right? You're likely to see it or hear it before we do. Can you explain to us, are we and why are we, if we are, negotiating with the Taliban? Didn't we go into Afghanistan to get rid of the Taliban?
We did go into Afghanistan to get rid of the Taliban, and when General Powell and Colin Powell talked about maybe we should bring the moderate Taliban on board back in October 2001, he was laughed off the stage and quickly reversed course. What worries me, just in a nutshell, are two things here. Whenever the military goes into an engagement, successful or unsuccessful, we have a massive lessons learned process where we go over what mistakes we made and how we can get better in the future. We have negotiated with the Taliban before. From 1995 to the year 2000, we had more than three dozen meetings with them, the same people we're negotiating with now. And the State Department, to my mind, has never conducted a lessons learned approach after any episode of failed engagement. The other thing, of course, is that we are releasing a major Taliban figure, a terrorist, in order just to have negotiations. And it seems as if we're giving the Taliban what they want up front. They have no incentive to negotiate sincerely.
Yeah, and I mean, if we negotiate with them and agree to some kind of, quote, peace, I mean, do we think that they will be honor-bound to observe the terms of it?
Well, that's what we think.
Yeah.
But certainly it's not what the Taliban think. And I've used this quip before, but it's important to remember Afghans have never lost a war. They just defect to the winning side.
Yeah.
And so if we believe that we can cut a deal with the Taliban, we're not going to split Afghanistan 50-50. Even if on paper it's a 50-50 split, in effect it's going to be a 90-10 split in favor of the Taliban. I mean, this is something which, I mean, I lived through in a way, because I was in Mazar-e-Sharif, a town in northern Afghanistan, back in 1997 when it was controlled by the Northern Alliance, but when the Taliban attacked it. There's no way I'd be idiotic enough to go into a war zone on the verge of a Taliban attack. But what happened is all the neighboring governors decided to cut a deal with the Taliban. So suddenly, instead of being 300 miles away, they were 10 miles away.
Yeah.
And that's when I got the heck out of there, back to Uzbekistan. But the point is, when we look at the initial Taliban episode steamrolling through Afghanistan, before they pushed into Kabul, before they pushed into any of these other Afghan cities, what they did is they struck a ceasefire. And as soon as they struck a ceasefire, ultimately that's what led them to push even further.